Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned hemp farm located right outside of Burlington, Vermont. Before they started growing hemp, Sunset Lake Farms produced cream for Ben & Jerry's. Sunset Lake CBD doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides to grow any of its hemp plants, and they use organic fertilizer and other sustainable farming techniques to ensure the long-term health of the soil and to minimize their carbon footprint. So like all of us, my days are really stressful. By the end of the night, my kids are in bed, I'm taking a minute to chill, but I'm still unwinding. I recently started using the Relax Gummies infused with CBD isolate, reishi mushroom extract, and ashwagandha root extract. I'm really glad I tried these because they really helped me get ready for a good night of sleep, and I really think I sleep better, so I'd highly recommend it. So check out Sunset Lake CBD today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. That's sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. Farmer owned, Vermont grown, Sunset Lake CBD.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey listeners, I want to tell you about a sponsor, Music Masters Collective. They're a nonprofit organization that produces unique music events, providing opportunities for fans and artists to meet and collaborate in an inspired and creative atmosphere. Every week, they host different events, all with the opportunity to learn from world-class musicians like Oteil Burbridge, Trouble No More, former members of The Band, Milk Carton Kids, Nikki Glaspie, Bill Frisell, Sean Colvin, and many more. This June, join the Fab Four, Joan Osborne, John Sebastian, Marshall Crenshaw, and a great group of faculty for the debut of Magical Mystery Camp. This all-inclusive, once-in-a-lifetime music vacation experience in the heart of the Catskills will be packed with nightly performances, workshops, speakers, song circles, open mics, and a lot more. If you're a performing musician at any level, bring your instrument. If you're a music lover, bring your good spirit. It's an amazing experience for individuals, friends, and couples alike. Registration is open, spots are filling up, so check it out soon. And scholarships are available. Check out magicalmysterycamp.com/helpingfriendly to learn more.
Friends, this is the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is episode 102. And this episode, we're going to talk about the Grateful Dead, which some of you probably know about. You may have heard of them. They're a new band.
They've been around a little while.
We've decided to bring them into the fold because they're already in our lives, and I'm guessing they're probably in your lives as well. So we wanted to talk about them a little bit. This episode, and Jonathan put a little mix together for us, a mashup, if you will, that will kind of mash your brain up, and we're going to talk about the Dead. So what do you guys think? Are you excited for this one?
Quite.
RJ sent approximately 84 tweets trying to pull the crowd.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know what? For once, that was Jonathan who sent that to get people's take on whether or not we should do an occasional or regular episode about the Grateful Dead. We had like 50 yeses and one no from our friend Sam, which was really awesome.
Yeah, that was a very adamant and clear no from him. That was pretty funny.
I don't think Sam knows the word yes, though.
That's true. That's a really good point. That's why he's a great American. You know, we've all obviously liked the Dead for a long time, some of us longer than others, because Jonathan is the elder statesman of the group. He even got to see the Grateful Dead, which Brad and I, of course, did not.
Yeah.
So this is cool. I think, you know, it's a good idea. We're going to try this, and then we're going to, you know, keep on mixing it in. And Jonathan's got some great ideas, so I'm excited to mix things up a bit and work this into the regular rotation.
The Dead, as I was mentioning earlier, just kind of, it's always been there for me, right? I mean, it's always kind of been a part of my life. My sister introduced me to it when I was young, before Phish. And Arjun, you and I saw our first show in October 95. Jonathan, your first show was 93.
My first Phish show?
Two.
94. Yeah.
94. So we're kind of like on the outer edge of being a noob, like generally kind of close. You know what I mean? the 3.0ers think we're like vets, but you know, the true vets think we're noobs. And as far as the Grateful Dead goes, we're all noobs. We're all noobs, man. You know, even Jonathan, he's seen him live, but
yeah,
you know,
but I only saw him in the '90s. So
right. 68. No, but none of us saw him in 68. Obviously.
Well, I mean, I saw three shows in 1970 and then I didn't see him again until 1991. Nice.
You and Dr. Emmett Brown.
Yeah, my DeLorean.
So we've got, I mean, there's so many comparisons between the Dead and Phish, of course, from, I mean, people who compare them too directly are people who don't know that much about either band, I think, because there's similarities, but like musically, there's not a lot of similarities in my mind between Phish and the Dead.
None at all.
There's right. a little well, bit of common yeah. ground in some of the Americana stuff that you know, Phish came up, but and also the guys in Phish came up listening to Grateful Dead, but you know, yeah, they draw on
I feel
so
like
much
there's commonality
material.
Between like the Dead and Mike, you know what I mean? Mike seems to, you know, the more countryside. Mike, I think, was in, he didn't like Destiny Unbound because he thought it sounded too much like a Dead song. I think we talked about that before, but Mike really seemed to be into it. I know Trey's talked about it too, but yeah, it was nice too. We had a few episodes ago, Holly Bowling, who's done both bands, you know, by herself on a piano, talked about how different they were, which I thought was refreshing too.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a, like I said, there's a lot of, there is some common ground, but they're so vastly different that one can, it just breeds arguments comparing them too directly.
Jonathan, you asked the question about what got us into the Dead, but you didn't answer in the document. So why don't you tell us about how you discovered the Dead?
You know, I think that it was probably my friend Mike Olson had a tape. He had the Skeletons in the Closet tape, or was that the other Best of the Grateful Dead one, and I think that's the one. And you know, we listened to it quite a bit and then started branching out, listening to albums, and got a couple shows and started listening to some live tapes, as well as collecting records and CDs and everything I could get, and pretty quickly started amassing a little collection. And so, and then the last day of my junior year of high school, I went and saw them at RFK. And that was it, basically.
It's a big show, man. Yeah.
Yeah, 91 it was objectively probably the best Grateful Dead show I saw, but really I enjoyed the crap out of them all after that. So
RFK is a huge stadium though, right? Like tons of people.
Yeah, it was the biggest thing I had ever seen at that point. It was my first concert, actually.
Oh wow.
So it was quite transformative. I mean, finally getting to see the band live. I was there with a bunch of my friends. I woke up that morning not planning to go, and during cold rain and snow, we're hopping over the rail down onto the field, running well up into fill zone, and just it was quite a night.
You also mentioned, Jonathan, that you know, Skeletons in the Closet, but it and the tape, it automatically sent me to like the tape cover, the jacket. And I always felt their artwork is a little different, you know, growing up. I listened to a lot of classic rock and there wasn't like much softness in classic rock albums, I guess.
Right.
At least artwork. And then, you know, it was Skeleton, so it wasn't necessarily like mundane or soft, but there was something nice about it, I thought. And that was one of the things I remember. It was like, whoa, this is kind of different just from the start, you know?
So your sister got you into them. How old would you say you were when that happened?
I was probably 11 or 12.
Okay.
She was like cool. 15 or 16. And she just started driving and like, you know, playing tapes in my dad's car.
Right.
And that was one of them that I like remember listening to her when it was just me and her. I remember trucking. I thought it was Living on Ritz vitamin C and cocaine.
Well, you know, there's some like, good wait. Crackers.
I was like, hold on. Yeah. Yeah. Like Ritz are pretty good. Like I think I know what vitamin C is and what's cocaine. Like,
but so, give me some Ritz crackers.
It's the other vitamin C.
Yeah. I'll never forget that shit. And she was like laughing at me about it, but yeah, it was, good stuff. So from there, like she was a cursory fan, not in a negative way, but, once I started talking to some more friends about it in high school, a couple years later, I realized there was that whole, undercurrent of tapes and just the subculture.
Right on. And
RJ, did Jim or your sister listen to him?
No. I think it was just like through, maybe probably you, Brad. You probably are the one who did it to me.
I'm sure, for sure.
Yeah, I think I was in like seventh grade. It was probably shortly after Brad and I became friends. I just remember listening to Dead Set and Reckoning a lot. And to the Skeletons from the Closet, obviously, album, which is kind of a funny thing now looking back. But that was like all that existed of the Grateful Dead as far as I knew. It's like you can't even really explain how all-encompassing the Dead is. I mean, at least in from my perspective, they're... Fish is so much more of like a niche, you know. The Dead is like, to me, yeah. The Dead captures American music in a way that no other band does. But that might just be me. I might be being overly romantic about it. But it's like it's such a perfect bridge of 60s and from the 60s to like classic rock to the then when we got to see Fish. I don't know. To me, there's something so special about the Dead that Fish is great. Obviously we love Fish, but to me, like, Fish has the prog rock influence and the sort of wacky weird stuff that influenced them that the Dead just doesn't have. And the Dead is just so much more purely American rock music to me, but not rock music in the derogatory term, it's not hard rock or whatever. It's not classic rock. It's just fucking awesome music.
I think they've got hard rock. Yeah. They've got classic rock. They've got classical. They've got jazz. They've got bluegrass. They've got the whole gamut. And similar things can be said about Fish, but Grateful Dead, they cover broad territory and they speak to maybe a different part of my brain, more parts of my brain, just different parts of my brain.
Yeah. I think, one of the things that I'm more comfortable introducing myself to someone about is the Grateful Dead. Like, I feel like it's more, I think you said it, RJ, encompassing or whatever, where Fish is definitely a smaller slice of the pie. And I feel like the Grateful Dead can encompass more people into their realm. And even recently with GD50 and those sorts of things, you look at it, it's huge now. And even people younger than us or, younger than 3.0 nudes in a non-derogatory sense are into the Dead now. It's like, it's caught on all over again. And that shows you just how great and broad the music is. Whereas in 94 or whatever, you were pie-holed pretty quickly into that, weird set of people if you told somebody like the Dead.
Yeah, and on the Fish comparison, actually, maybe Fish is more like the Dead now than they ever have been. Is that possible musically?
There was a point where they,
sure.
Fish wasn't big on exploratory jamming. And then right around the time when the Dead stopped existing, Fish was getting big on exploratory jamming. It was a very different kind of jamming. It sounded nothing like your Dark Stars or your other ones or what have you. And frankly, the Dead had done a lot less jamming at that point than they earlier in their career. But, there's something to be said for that because Fish's catalog is broad and it covers almost more of the Americana and various sounds than it ever did before.
Well, I think there's also an issue that just the presence of space, you know, which the Dead is like, is that's something I love about the Dead. There's just, there's space that just builds between notes or between passages or whatever. And Fish, as you said, like Fish wasn't really into space for a while. They were into like filling up space with notes as much as possible.
That's
now
true.
Like listen to Winter Queen or listen to even like, I mean, even an older song, like you can, an older song that's played now, you're going to get much more. I don't know. Is there like a musical term for that? You guys know what I'm saying, though. There's just,
patience,
I mean, it's
or
like
something.
I feel like I hear that way more now than I did in older Fish.
I think age and patience play into that quite a bit.
Timing, you can't not mention timing, though, either, because, but Jonathan, you said it. It's like 95, August 95, Jerry passes, and then 95 was like the Fleaser, the Mud Island, right? Like, this is when they were also starting to expand. And whether Trey is a genius and he realized now is the time and we have to start kind of filling the shoes or grabbing the reins, whatever you want to say, it was perfect timing, right? I mean, if Fish were 10 years younger or older, I don't think it would be the same.
Yeah. Yeah, it all blends perfectly. Let the liquor tell it. That's what Outkast says.
Why don't we talk about a little more specifically then about Grateful Dead, and let's venture into talking about what our favorite shows are, if you can. Brad, do you have a favorite show?
Oh man, I mean, I saw this and I didn't even like answer the question on the document just because, I got to say that, it's not all the same show, but the 100-Year Hall show, which is from like, 72 Germany, some crazy town. It was in April or May, right, of 72. And that CD is something I'll always go back to. There's a Bertha opener. I've talked about it before. I think Bertha is like the perfect opener for me at any time. There's China Cat. It's just a Jack Straw. That to me is quintessential. It takes me back. And that takes just a little bit more importance over Without a Net, which is from like 90, 89, 90 Europe. So I can't give you a specific, but I'll tell you that the 72 shows, Europe 72 is my favorite era, hands down.
That's, man, that's not a bad answer.
I totally forgot about that release. It came out in 95, probably right when we were like driving around and starting to buy compact discs. Crazy to think about. I totally forgot about that album. That was like a pretty big release at that time. Was it big, Jonathan, or just for us?
Oh no, it was significant because they were, you know, they had in just the years just prior begun really dipping into the vault. We'd gotten one from the vault already, and two from the vault might have been out already.
Is that the first one?
And
no,
that's one from the vault is the 75 show.
Oh yeah, yeah,
Great,
yeah,
American
Music
Hall,
right.
75.
I'm thinking of Dick's Pick, sorry.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they were starting to dig into the archive, and 100 Year Hall, it was a big deal. It was good to get that show. You know, it was great quality. It was nice to have it on CD, as opposed to the tapes that we were scrambling for because we weren't circulating stuff. I mean, there was, you know, I wasn't anywhere near anybody who was doing DAT in 1995.
Nice.
Or I was just met somebody, you know, one or two people, and you know, I wasn't collecting any DATs, and so it was nice to get digital Dead, and really great material at that. So,
yeah, it looks like there was in 1995 three live releases according to the internets. One was Dick's Picks 2, which is from Columbus in 71, and then 100 Year Hall came out in the fall, and then like a month and a half later, Dick's Picks 3 came out, which is that amazing 77 show from Florida with the Music Never
That's
Stops.
The 523, right? And the dancing thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Long ass dancing.
Wow. Yeah. I guess I was ordering those when they came out, but it all runs together, man, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Telling us, man.
What doesn't run together is Jerry's like dance guitar, like that laser, like the dance laser that he would play.
Yeah, gosh, yeah.
It was amazing too. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same, man. I go back to Europe 72 every single Friday night, pretty much. I turn on one of those shows, and once they released that whole collection, you know.
Yeah, once they released all of them, and that artwork is amazing. And
when was that? Was that
on Spotify? Like a couple years ago, right? Yeah. Two, maybe three.
Outrageous.
It's just great. And then I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, they released the Dead at the Movies. It was like they played in Germany on a cable show.
Oh yeah, wow!
And they recorded it, and that was like went to the movies
was,
and saw
the
that.
Beat Club or something. I saw that.
Yeah,
that was pretty great.
Like, it took me back, right when we loved Europe 72, or I still love it, but you know what I mean. When you first started to get into it.
Yeah, Jonathan, you might. I'm curious if you have the, specific shows and dates throughout the. Throughout the history of the Dead, and for me, it's more of tours, months. It's more of like a landscape view. Whereas with Fish, I can pick out very specific shows from any era. With the Dead, it's like I go to months or tours, like you know, 73 or spring 77 or anything in 76 or 72. But what's your is there a difference for you between the Fish and the Dead in terms of how you think about specific shows versus tours, that
you
sort
know,
of thing?
It all goes to the time you put in. So I probably 15 years ago could have told you more specifics on both bands, show by show, date by date, about the time, you know, it's just about the time you put in and the focus you put to it. And your brain gets a little soft as you get old and stop doing this stuff. But I would say I definitely have a clear favorite single show from Grateful Dead. While I still have, you know, a number of tours or sections of tours and things that appeal to me and are among my favorites, but I always, and for the longest time, have just continually gone back to the 8/27/72 show from Venita as my favorite. And it's
a great one.
Yeah,
so
it's
good.
A great one. And so that's where I land.
It's amazing
all the time.
They released it too. Right? Like
you know,
when they
lobbying for it. I somewhere on my blog, you'll find an open letter to the Grateful Dead and like from 2012 or something, begging them to release it. And then soon after they finally did. So
that's awesome. That's great.
When it was, I don't know exactly.
Cool, they read your blog.
Yeah, that's my dream. That's I imagine that's what happened. but it's such a terrific show. I shouldn't have to tell anybody about it, but if you are the Fish fan here who doesn't know that show, that's a good one to get into. It was a particularly magic day, and the playing is...
Hot day, yeah.
It was one of the hottest days on record in that area of Oregon.
Yeah.
And the magic was in the air and in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And then the music, and somewhere right around China Rider, the switch gets flipped and the band doesn't look back and they just start going. Everything seems to hit just about right, other than, you know, a lot of tuning between songs because the sun make their instruments go funny.
Right,
and,
right.
Stuff like that.
So the story, though, is that they dosed it at halftime, right, at the set break?
Well, you know, I don't know the specific of when or who or how. I just know that it seems pretty clear that there was a lot of that going on. And
nice.
And the music.
I'm surprised to learn they were doing that.
Right. I'm not. I wasn't there. I can't speak to who did what, where, when exactly. But all I know is that the music is insane. The playing in the band that night. Everybody talks about the Dark Star and with good reason, but other things. There's the playing in the band that night is a ripper. The Jack Straw is gorgeous. You know, the Greatest Story Ever Told is one of the best versions. Although my friend Andy would certainly argue that They trumped it in like September or something that year, and those are good too. And the Bird Song
is that
delightful.
Yeah, it's amazing. From and Bobby's little comments right in between.
Oh, there's great banter,
especially
on
the first set. Yeah, just great. But was the Jack Straw the duet? Were they both singing?
Yeah, I think so. But really, for me, it's all about Jerry's guitar intro on the very beginning of the thing. It's just so
okay.
It soars. It's just beautiful, and I can hear it in my head right here.
Jerry's pretty good at it, man.
Anyways,
pretty good at it, and it's so nice that. I mean, we all have a common ground here, right? And fish, but this is something else that we have a common ground about, and it's funny how that works that way, and it's different. But it's still music, and it still brings us together, and it's just fucking wonderful, man.
Yeah, there's nothing really better than the Dead. I mean, still for me.
Well,
I don't think there's a doubt that it's my favorite band, and I, you know, we have a Fish podcast, and I've seen Fish, obviously, way. I mean, I've never seen the Dead, but, I you know, there's no question to me that I think they're my favorite. You know, and RJ, you feel the same way, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I can't really like go a day or two without listening to the Dead. I guess I'd say the same thing about Fish, but there's something much more universally appealing to me. Fish, I have to be in a specific space and like mindset, which luckily I get into pretty much every day. But but when we're like
Dead's more cathartic, bro. The Dead's more like tea. Fish is like coffee.
I don't, like right. Friday night, I'm at like, Rachel, you know, we're having a beer and just hanging out. Like putting on a Dead show is much more intuitive to me than like, you know, what like era of Fish do I want to listen to? Do I want to like, you know, I don't know. It feels much more natural a lot of times.
It's my go-to when at just about any time. I mean, obviously I listen to a lot of other music. Maybe it's not obvious, but certainly I listen to a lot of other music, but when all else fails, play Dead.
Exactly. So let's do that, Jonathan.
Okay, so we have this, I made this mix like, I don't even know, maybe in '05. And it's the kind of thing that I've done several others. I did some with Fish and, you know, we did one. I put one up last year. We did for the summer into summer tour.
Yeah, right.
But I put this together in, as I said, in 2005 or so. And so some people have heard it. It's been out there here and there. And it's kind of built on an idea that, you know, my buddy Joel and I kicked around in the 90s when we were flipping through Dead Bass, looking at, oh, look at this show. Oh, man, what about, I'd like to hear that jam and listen, going through our tapes and, you know, well, what if this jam went into that thing and they did this and then they did that, you know, even though we're jumping in between years and stuff. And we could have done some of that on with our cassette tapes, but the work was, well, just we weren't going to do it. And at some point in when this century came around, I finally had the tools and a little bit of time and definitely the inclination to start doing this kind of thing. So I made a couple others, made some Fish ones, and then decided to tackle the Grateful Dead. And so this is a, what, like, just about 80-minute version, if you will, of the other one. It runs the whole sequence of, you know, with cryptical, a little bit of drums, not too much drums, into the other one and off into space. There's a little Spanish jam, a little Mind Left Body jam. It's not precisely seamless, but it's designed to flow.
It's pretty close.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that I noticed most was the sound of the recordings. You know what I mean? That's kind of when you can, and it's not your fault. It's just, right. You know, but it seems like that's when you can kind of tell when it switches.
Yeah. And sometimes it does jump quite a bit, from year to year, and we'll put the track listing or, you know, the listing of source and material with the timings up on the website. So everybody can, if they want to follow along or if they're listening to a jam and they want to know what it is, you could probably go back and check this out.
Yeah, and it's really, I mean, I'd encourage people to listen to it and then look at the track listing. It's an incredible assortment. I can't even imagine how much work went into this, Jonathan. So it's cool to listen to and then to look through all the stuff that you spliced together. So nice work.
Thanks. It took a little time, but I think it paid off. So should we stop talking about it and let everybody hear it?
I guess so.
Okay.
Let's do it. Let us know, everybody, too. If you want more of this, we could play whole shows or sets. Check out the Dead Pod, as we've always mentioned, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be interested to hear what people want to hear. Clearly, there's more room for Grateful Dead discussion and podcasts. And I think one thing that I'm excited about is to get other people, you know, on here to talk about the Dead, people who are much more knowledgeable than us, than me. And I'm going to speak for Brad and myself and say that we're not super knowledgeable about the Dead as much as Jonathan and people who may even have seen them live in concert, which is pretty cool. Seems pretty cool. I'd like to have done that. So I'm just, I don't know. It's going to be cool.
It was all right.
Cool to bring some different perspectives on. Yeah. You guys can just have your Grateful Dead episodes and talk about how cool it was to see the Dead, and Brad and I will just sit in our closets and cry.
Like, totally.
Cool. All right. Hey, thanks, guys. Don't forget to check out the website, and you can find all the track listing and all that stuff and all of our other episodes at hfpod.com. You can hit us up on the Twitter at hfpod. Tell us if you like this Grateful Dead stuff or you want more Fish, or if you want both, we can probably do that too. And until then, do we have anything else to say, RJ?
Well, I do want to say one thing. What's which that? Is I think people, if we could request, people should review us on iTunes, which is something we haven't asked people to do in quite a while, but it's important and
it's very helpful.
Helpful. Very helpful. And then also keep on rocking.
What is a city without its music?
The legacy of the New York Philharmonic
is incredible. Nearly two centuries of history. That's a lot of music and a lot of stories.
I was sitting on stage for the very first time thinking, I can't quite believe this is happening.
Join me, Jamie Bernstein, as we explore the history of the New York Philharmonic. It's the NY Phil Story Made in New York, a podcast about a city, its people, and their orchestra. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Okay. Respectfully dedicate this set to the memory of Neil Cassidy.
One, two, three, four. Watch him die.
Come on. Thank you. rainbow colors blended. His mind remained unbended yet today. Oh,
you know he had to die.
Thank you. Probably wouldn't have stopped there, but we got a broken string.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello out there.
Yes, we're out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together, we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's Magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!